Hey, what's up, everybody, and welcome back. Today, we are here to discuss the results from the UFC Fight Night Vera versus Sandhagen card. And man, Corey Sandhagen is the real fucking deal. And this fight, honestly, what this fight over the past weekend goes to show you, and I think we knew this all along anyway, is just how fucking deep bantamweight is. I mean, it feels like there are probably like four or five guys at the top who really could be champion, right? You've got Merab, you've got Aljamain, you've got Corey, you've got Piotr Jan, you've got all kinds of killers coming up through there right now. And, you know, it seems like every fight that you put on in the top 15 has potential to be a real legitimate matchup. I mean, Adrian Yanez versus Rob Font is coming up next weekend. You know, that's a huge fucking fight. There's just, it feels like every matchup you make in the top 15 at bantamweight is interesting and has potential to be like a real legitimate barn burner. And, you know, I think that's due to the talent at bantamweight right now. It's insane. But, you know, incredible card all the way through. And I kind of thought this might be the case when we got hit with this one. You know, it's there was just a lot of good matchups through and through. Unfortunately, one of the most interesting matchups of the night, in my opinion at least, I was really looking forward to seeing Manel Kopp versus Alex Perez, and it got pulled like 30 minutes before the in fact, I was watching, I don't even, they probably did, a lot of times like between the fights I'm cleaning, I'm up cooking or something, right? I'll do something in between, I'll do like stretch, I don't know, something, like it's too boring for me to just fucking sit there and listen to everything the commentators say between the fights, but I just noticed that they moved on to the next fight. Like, I was like, holy fuck, where's Kopp and Perez? And my immediate thought was, oh, they bumped him up on the card, which makes sense because it's a huge matchup at flyweight. Nope, just nixed. So, you know, I think Perez had some problems. I'm not sure if they've come out and said exactly what those were, but I think he was the party that decided to pull out. And again, like, at the last possible minute, 30 minutes before the fight. So that was a fucking bummer, man. That was a fight on the card that, I know flyweight all the time isn't the most exciting division, but man, that's, I personally think it is. I feel like it's just how much marketing does the UFC want to put into them. I think if you're talking about in terms of technique, bantamweight and flyweights are two of the funnest to watch. You know what I mean? Like bantamweight, I think you're starting to really get that power thrown in there that guys have, and guys with knockout potential like Adrian Yanez who fights next. I was just watching film on him. That's why his name keeps popping into my head. But you get guys like that who have real knockout power, real skill. You know, those lower weight classes are a lot of fun to watch, and I think that there's some fighters at 125 that, you know, I think also this is an odd thing to say, but I think Demetrius Johnson running that division the way he did for so long maybe hurt it a little bit. You know, because now you've got Figueiredo and Moreno at the top, and obviously Moreno has kind of claimed that number one spot as the champion, and I think kind of silenced or put to bed that quadrilogy, whatever you want to call it, between him and Figueiredo. But man, when Demetrius was there and running shit, it just felt like nobody could really touch him, and I wonder sometimes if that hurt the division, because I think you start to view the rest of the talent pool as not up to par, right? When the belt changes hands a lot, it means that you've got, like, in theory, but this is the argument against that, right? Heavyweight. The belt changes hands all the time, but I think you could argue that, like, there are points that heavyweight and light heavyweight especially go through some of the heavier weight classes where their talent isn't anywhere near as deep as the lower divisions. But because Demetrius dominated for so long, it made the rest of the talent pool look weak, you know? And I don't think that's the case. I think 125 has a lot of talented fighters in it. And I just think that, you know, Demetrius is, his shadow is still cast over the division a little bit, in my opinion, you know? And he's obviously since left for one. He's actually coming to fight here in Denver in May. And I wanted to go see it, but I waited too long to buy the tickets. Maybe they've gone back down in price, but I should have bought them when they were like $100-150. Mikey Musumeci is going to be grappling on that card, but anyway, how the fuck did we get to flyweight? Oh yeah, because the Manel Kopp and Alex Perez fight got canceled, so that was a bummer. But I thought the rest of the card was pretty fun. There's a few on here, admittedly, guys that I missed. I was doing like house shit this weekend. My wife was out of town skiing with her family. I had a work event, so I was like I said, in between the fights, I'd be like cleaning some shit up or trying to put like little projects together and stuff. Fucking, I've been doing like small, I'm not a handyman at all, but I've been doing like small around the house projects, and I tried to replace our fucking shower head upstairs, and I didn't put like an O-ring on, obviously, that like I just kind of attached everything, screwed it together, and I fucking went down and turned the main water line onto the house, and it blew the fucking faucet off the wall, the handle. It was going fucking crazy. It was like you let out a fire hydrant in a shower. Just ran off the wall, soaked the whole bathroom. So I'm definitely not a handyman, but I'm learning, right? So like I'm trying to do some shit around the house. So that's what I was putting like new door handles on and shit. Shit that should be simple, but takes me fucking an hour and a half to figure out, you know what I mean? Dumb stuff. So with all the hiccups I've had so far, I replaced like a light fixture. I was nervous about that, but I bought like a volt tester and like killed the power to the whole house. I was like, fuck it. I'm not fucking with anything. I'm too accident prone to be fucking around with this stuff. But anyway, couple fights in here I missed because of that, right? But like Victor Altamirano, I was kind of watching this one in the background versus Vinicius Salvador. Altamirano picked up a win and what seemed to be a good fight to me. Again, guys, I'm not the perfect fan, right? I missed these ones. I did catch this fight right here. CJ Vergara had a huge comeback in his hometown against Daniel Lacerda. And man, Lacerda is a guy who just can't catch a fucking break. He's had four UFC fights. He's lost all four of them so far. He's 0-4 in the organization. But man, he has some impressive starts to fights. He comes out fucking banging. He always puts his opponents in trouble, and he can just never finish the job. And then when he can't finish it in that first round, he burns out, right? And he starts to get tired, and his opponent takes over. And that's exactly what happened here. I mean, he had CJ Vergara running around the octagon, trying to stay alive, trying to just stay conscious. And Lacerda was chasing him, man. And in moments like that, it's like Lacerda got excited, and that's understandable. But when your opponent is panicking, you have to start applying calculated pressure. You can't let your emotions get the best of you in those situations. Easier said than done. But you got to start stalking and walking him down and understand that he's still hurt. And if you keep touching him slowly but surely, he's going to continue to stay hurt, right? When you start chasing and you miss big, then he's got a big opportunity to recover. It's like, it's very important that you keep calm pressure on your opponents. So Daniel Lacerda is a guy, man, who I think you got to send him back down to some. The problem is that he's probably going to go to other organizations and dominate. So what the fuck do you do with this kid? You know what I mean? I think you still have to send him back down until he can get some more experience under his belt and learn to calm himself down. But the UFC's given him plenty of opportunities. I mean, he's had winnable fights. He's dangerous. I don't know if it's something that I just decide personally that I'm going to pick on throughout the event, or if it's something, a theme that actually does pop up and seems to be reoccurring. But I've talked about this in the breakdown, and I'll talk about it again now. Energy management is so important in professional fighting, especially at a UFC level. You cannot burn too hot too fast, right? If you also, we're going to talk about this in a later fight, the Chidi Njukwani. I keep mispronouncing his last name, and I make a cognizant effort to remember, and then I forget. This is why I'm terrible at the house stuff. I'm forgetful. I forget what I did, all that shit, right? But anyway, what the fuck was I just talking about? Oh, energy management. It's so important to remain consistent throughout the three rounds. It's almost better to remain like on the side of not having it so that in the third you can lean on it, right? Like you take your foot off the gas a little in the first and second so you can really empty the tank in the third. That's okay. Guys get into problems when they either burn all their gas out in the first round and then they're running on fumes, or you don't do anything at all and end up conserving your energy throughout the entire fight and never throwing any volume and never really getting anything out there, getting things going. So you run into those two issues, right? And when you get to a UFC level, you have to be able to go for all three rounds or all five rounds, whatever amount of time is allotted, right? So those are the problems I think we ran into on this card. Again, not sure if it's something that, you know, maybe it's a story in every card and I just decided to pick on it for this one, but energy management, man, it's so important. Trevin Giles, I think I missed these next two fight guys doing shit. Trevin Giles beat Preston Parsons via split decision. Not sure what to think about that one. There was a lot of questionable judging on this one, obviously. And then Lucas Alexander beat Steven Peterson via unanimous decision, right? Peterson's been doing it a while. And I think, did he retire or some shit? Maybe he didn't. I thought I saw something about him retiring. See, guys, I miss stuff. This is what I get for fucking... he announced his retirement after the fight. So, but man, he's got like 30 professional fights to his name. He's been doing it a long time. So, interesting fight there. But anyway, moving on to the main card, which I actually saw all of these, right? Like, I sat down and watched the main card. So, starting off with Daniel Pineda over Tucker Lutz. Man, Pineda was a big underdog in this, but the experience different. And again, I think load management and just having little tips and like tricks that you can go to when you're a veteran, obviously super important, right? But also, just knowing how to conserve your energy throughout the fight and when to go and when to not go. And knowing, like, there are certain, like, things that you know it's a good time to do stuff and not. And that's just what we saw. We saw a guy in Pineda who has nearly what? He's 28 and 14, 29 and 14. I don't know what his record is now. Maybe that's not updated. But anyway, he's got excess of 40 professional fights versus Tucker Lutz with like what? Between 12 and 15? I mean, that's a big difference in experience. You're talking about a guy who has almost three times as many fights as you professionally, you know? So I think that was a big deal in this fight, and it shone through. And, you know, Pineda just stayed the course, was able to hurt Lutz with some stuff, and then got him out of there with the choke. So experience coming into play again, heavy on this card, and just energy management. And it could not be more true in the next fight between Albert Duraev and Chidi Njokuwani. Njokuwani just didn't do enough throughout the three rounds. And this is crazy, right? This is what we see, though, as guys try to figure it out. Chidi has a lot of MMA fights, but once you get to a UFC and you get to a UFC level, in order to have success consistently, you have to find that balance. And man, in Chidi's fight against RoboCop, there was a case of him burning too hot too fast. And just like we talked about earlier, in his fight against Albert Duraev this past weekend, he didn't do like enough. He didn't do enough over the three rounds. I bet he had a lot left when that fight was over to give, right? So you can burn too hot too fast, or you cannot do enough thinking you're going to save it all up for some, I don't know, grand explosion at the end. But you've got to be careful to like burn that energy bar down at a steady pace so that you have enough to get you through the third rounds, right? You got to, man, you've got to be able to go the entire fight. And if not, you better make damn sure you win the first two and that you can survive the third and not get finished because you're so exhausted. So for Chidi, maybe this one's questionable to some people. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of split decisions and bad judging on this fight, I think, especially, again, we'll talk about it in Macy Barber, Andrea Lee. But, man, I just think that Chidi didn't do enough and that you can't look back at this and get disappointed at the decision if you thought you won because you just weren't putting the volume out there. So for Chidi, very talented, right? Very good kickboxer, long guy, powerful guy. Think he has a lot of potential, but man, you got to bring, this was a case where he had to bring the energy levels up a little bit so that he could kind of get something in Duraev's face and get some volume there, and he just wasn't doing that. So, interesting fight there from Chidi. He's just got to find that balance, man. Last time he burnt too hot too fast. Now he barely burned at all, probably had a ton left. Find that middle ground somewhere, man. You got to win two of those three rounds, and you got to be willing to put a little bit out there but not overexert yourself. So, moving on, talking about some bad judging. Macy Barber versus Andrea Lee. I felt initially watching this that there was no way you give this fight to Macy Barber. But watching it back, man, it depends on what your criteria is. It really does. And Andrea Lee got that nice takedown in the first round, but Macy trapped her arm from the bottom and started hitting her with those elbows. That's a fucking bad position for Andrea Lee, regardless of the fact that she's on top. And then it leads to a scramble eventually where Macy gets back to her feet. So yeah, beautiful takedown by Lee. But Macy surprised me in this fight, guys. I thought Lee was going to have an advantage in the kickboxing department, but really, Andrea Lee struggled on the feet against Macy Barber. Macy Barber was really landing that overhand right. She had a lot of crack on her punches. She was the one kind of initiating things up, like, in those sort of clinch situations, right? But Andrea Lee, she was the one who was able to get the fight to the ground and be on top. So watching this back the first time, all three rounds is kind of crazy. I think Andrea Lee got one of those rounds in there, right? I thought she got two or three, for sure. But watching it back, man, there's robberies, and then there's understanding that fights are close. Macy Barber was doing more damage. She had more impact with her shots, and maybe she wasn't controlling the grappling exchanges in terms of getting the fight to the ground most of the time. And even when she did, Andrea Lee would pop right back up. So, you know, it's tough, but Macy, I think, was more effective on the feet. And if you're not putting a lot of stock into that control time and the time on the ground, and you're looking at damage, I can kind of, people were fucking grilling Dan Mergliotta, man, but, and I thought Lee won the third. If I had to pick the second or third, I'd say the third was probably Lee's. I thought she finished it strong. They both landed takedowns in that round, but Lee, again, got the, like, the last one. But, man, Barbara was cracking her, and Andrea Lee was really struggling with that, and I think that Barbara's shots had a lot more impact, and I don't have a problem with them giving Barbara that win at all. I really don't. Like, I there's this robbery thing we keep talking about, and if some the judge who gave the fight to Vera, come on, now we're talking about crazy. Like, if Vera had won that fight against Sandhagen, that is straight fucking robbery. But this fight right here, I don't think so. I just think different people's interpretations of what's happening. And maybe one of the judges, I think it was Mergliotta, gave it 30-27. Barbara maybe missed a round, but fuck, man. It's a close fight. That's what you get with close fights. So I don't think you can ding him too much for that one. I think watching it back, Barbara was landing a lot of damaging shots. So anyway, moving on. Nate Landwehr versus Austin Lingo. This one, guys, kind of went the way I thought it would go, to be honest. Lingo is really good at pressuring, and he does have good hands, and he has good kicks that he mixed in there. He has good footwork. He cuts the octagon off, but he's a little bit predictable in his striking. And, you know, Paul Felder called that out a little bit. He kind of throws the same kind of patterns. He throws with the same rhythms. He doesn't necessarily mix things up a ton, but he was doing a good job of landing on Nate Landwehr early on. And then as the round started to fade, you know, Landwehr started to be more effective. He landed a sucker punch for a naked choke. And this guy, man, is never in a boring fight. So great fucking win there by Nate Landwehr. I think he's a fun guy to watch. I think he's got some real things to clean up in terms of defensively, right? Like, he's a good, if you watch his offense, I said this in the breakdown too, he's a pretty skilled fighter, right? Like, he's got a lot of shit going on. He's got a lot of, like, a lot of technical things that he does right in the clinch, a lot of things that he does right in terms of, like, his boxing and stuff, but defensively, man, whew, the guy's there to be hit. The guy's there to be hit. And I think that he has a lot to clean up in that area if he really wants to excel and make it to the top levels of the sport. I think he's really going to struggle to climb the rankings ladder if he doesn't clean some things up defensively and get a little bit more intelligent about that stuff. But regardless, a big win and an exciting one for Nate Landwehr. Holly Holm versus Yana Santos. Man, this one went complete opposite of how I thought it was going to go. I thought Holly would struggle to get the fight to the ground. You know, Yana would make it difficult in the situations. And I was basically just going off the youth advantage. You know, I thought Yana would be younger, just more powerful, a little bit faster, and she'd be able to stay out of those spots. But Holly Holm took her down, dominated her throughout the entire fight. I was kind of right about it not being the most exciting fight ever. But Holm got her down, man, did what she had to do, and picked up a win and looked good at 41 years old. She still looks good. But, you know, I just don't... Women's bantamweight is weird. I just don't see Holly. She's going to beat a lot of these, like, kind of semi-top contenders, but I don't really see her hanging around at the top of the division or winning the belt again. Tough to do at 41, but we'll see. Crazy. Glover Teixeira's out there, fucking existing, man. He pulled it off. He got that world championship when he was older, so we'll see. But let's move on. Talk about the main event real quick here, and that's Corey Sandhagen versus Chito Vera. Man, Sandhagen is one of the baddest motherfuckers in the world, no doubt. Bantamweight, he's one of the top three, four bantamweights right now. And he went out there and dominated Vera. I mean, I thought personally he won every round. So it's almost like the judge who gave this fight to Vera was scoring it in a way that he expected, like, the story of the fight and how people were expected to perceive it. Because Cheeto's a slow starter, and then he starts landing some power shots and, like, the later rounds. And that did happen, but few and far between. And Corey was just dotting him the fuck up the entire fight. Like, Cheeto's several power shots that he landed that, by the way, never had Corey really, like, on chicken legs or anything like that. Never had him wobbled. Never had him really, really hurt or out of it, it felt like. You can't just award that to somebody and be like, there's the round. No. Corey dominated this fucking fight from bell to bell. He outpointed Vera. Everything that Vera would do, any kind of power shot he did land, Corey would come back with his own stuff. And while it might not have had more significance in terms of, like, the power or the effect that it appeared to have, he was landing like 5 to 10 shots to Cheeto's one or two. It was crazy. The output was there. The accuracy there was there. The volume was there. The footwork was there. The wrestling was there. Vera did not win this fucking fight, and he certainly didn't win the last three rounds. The judges watching stuff like this, and I think they're scoring it how they expect, but that's not what we want. Like, you're scoring it how you think the fans expect the fight to go, or how they think it'll go, or how they'll perceive it, but that's not what we want. We want an accurate retelling or an accurate scoring or analysis of what the fuck actually happened during the fight. That's what you want to know. You want to know who won, and you want the person who won to be rightfully rewarded with the win. You don't want to give it to somebody just because they did a couple of big things in the moment and made the crowd go, ooh, ah. Of course they're rooting for Cheeto. That was obvious from the get-go. But the couple strikes that he landed that gets the crowd to pop, you don't count that on a scorecard, you fucking moron. This is an obvious one. Like, this is why, like, most of the time, like, even when we were talking earlier about the fucking, the Macy Barber versus Andre Lee fight, I give the judges some leeway because what makes the sport beautiful, in my opinion, is it is open to interpretation and it is subjective. But goddamn, you cannot watch that fight and think Cheeto won. You shouldn't be scoring fights. If that's your honest interpretation of it, I don't give a fuck what excuses you come up with. You can't explain yourself out of that. That is terrible judging, and that's just terrible. Either you were scoring it again how you thought people wanted it to be scored, or you're just a fucking, you have no idea what you're watching. It's one of those two. It's as easy as that. Or you do know what you're watching, and you're scoring it incorrectly for malicious reasons, right? So it's like one of those three things. You got to fall under that umbrella somewhere. Otherwise, what the fuck is going on here? That guy, he should certainly never be allowed to judge a main event again, but man, we got to look at what the fuck he thinks is going on if he thinks that Vera won that fight. But anyway, I digress. At least, regardless of the fact that it was a split decision, they got the right person the victory. And man, I love what Corey did. Corey's one of the good guys in the sport. Immediately goes out, calls out Merab, says he would feel slimy if he did that right. I feel like 135 is a division full of mostly good guys. You got a lot of good guys in there. Could you imagine Colby Covington coming out and saying, man, that was a great performance. Like, let's say he just picks up a win. He's like, Bilal Muhammad, though, has been streaking through the division. I really think that he should get a title shot before me. I'm going to go fight, like, Shavkat Rakhmonov. I'm going to fight one of these guys and earn it. I don't want to shy away from challenges. There's your personality differences between Corey and Colby, but the problem is that they both work. And Colby's style and that, like, fuck you, everything's mine, that kind of selfish mentality that he has, sells pay-per-views, you know? So there are situations where I think in this one, like, where Corey, though, the reason he can get away with being a nice guy and doing call-outs like that is because he's backing it up with his fights. He's fighting a lot. He's fighting the top guys. He's making himself undeniable, right? And with Colby, he's kind of taking a different approach, and he doesn't necessarily have to be undeniable in terms of the opponents that he's beaten, but he's undeniable in terms of people want to see him fight. Whether it's to see him win or see him lose, they want to see him fight. So he gets that bump into the main event spot over a guy like Bilal strictly because he's more marketable, you know? If you're not going to be marketable like that, you really got to go in and make yourself undeniable in the fights. You got to wipe out the division and leave no doubt that there are guys coming up that could beat you, you know? So you take that approach, or you take the approach that Conor McGregor and Colby have done, where they get to kind of, like, I don't want to say cherry pick, but you get to work your way through your opponents and sell massive pay-per-views, and you become a draw, and that gives you a lot more power. Thing with Corey is he's still, and this is the true way, like, this is the path of the warrior, the martial arts way. He's got to keep performing at a high level to keep interest on him because of his personality. That's not a bad thing. That's probably the way it should be, but his success and his ability to sell pay-per-views and get title shots and stuff like that is going to come strictly because of his performances, which, again, I'm a purist. That's what I like. I like the shit talking to it, makes it fun, but the reality is that it's a business. Winning fights sells, but running your mouth and being loud and being a personality sells a little bit more. So it gets you away with, you know, skipping the line sometimes. I think that's why Chael Sonnen, when he says, I don't know what guys are doing out there, going out there thanking this person, thanking that, go out there, call somebody out. Thing is, it's not everybody's personality, right? Not everybody's going to do that. But the ones who are willing to do that are rewarded a little bit more. So, yeah. Anyway, it's just interesting to see how there's different people in those divisions, right? Like, how they handle it. Like, you know, if Colby was at 135 and in Sanhagen shoes, he'd be like, man, fuck Merab. If Merab's going to sit around all day and wait for his friend, da-da-da-da-da, I'm going to fight for the title next. That's what he would do. you know that's what Colby would do. He'd do something similar to that. And Corey's like, man, I'm respecting it. I'm walking through everybody, and I'm fighting Merab next. And I love that, and I love that fucking matchup at bantamweight. And that's a true contender bout right there. So I'm excited to see how that plays out. I'm excited to see how things shake out at bantamweight. And I am interested to see how Aljamain and Merab handle this moving forward, because obviously there's underlying tension a little bit there. Like, is Aljamain going to move up to 145? It feels like that's kind of the only way, especially if Merab goes out and beats Sandhagen or something like that, and he's the only one left. Something's got to give there, whether it's moving up for Aljamain, whether it's relinquishing the belt, whether they decide to fight. I mean, I don't know, man. I we'll see how things shake out, but I would hope that there aren't a lot of friendships in MMA. This happens throughout the years, too. You can track it over history. They get broken up because of stuff like this. Guys move camps. Guys, like, they do all kinds of stuff because they all have a similar goal in mind. There is, and Corey said this in the lead up to the press conference, I think, there is something to maintaining those friendships and keeping those strongs. And, like, those strong. And Ally, Quinta, Aljamain, Merab, I think they do have something special going on there. And there is a part of me that would be sad to see some, because they're all, especially Merab and Aljamain, are probably great because of each other. So to see that kind of break up and turn into something else where maybe feelings get bitter and fight over it, I don't know if I would like to see that as a fan, man. There's something good about keeping stuff like that together. So we'll see how it shakes out. Interesting little spot going on there at 135, though. But anyway, guys, that's going to wrap this one up. I just wanted to recap the fights real quick. I'm in the middle. Like I said, I'm watching Adrian Yanez right now versus Rob Font. So I'm getting ready for the fights in 2 weekends from now. Pereira versus Adesanya, the rematch. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. I'll keep pumping out content, or try to, between now and then. And thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. If you enjoyed, do me a favor. Hit the subscribe button. Give it a thumbs up. All that shit. Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much again for tuning in. Bye-bye.